I travel probably this last year I think it was 37 weeks. I was trying to get it down. It's great to be here. It's great to be here in California. This is the first time I've ever come to this event. So I refer to myself as a Linux Foundation tourist. I'm just still learning the language, learning the mechanics. I use lots of open source software and I try to contribute. But this is a great experience for me as well, and I appreciate being part of it. So one of the goals for this session, I have a kind of a little provocateur I want to be. I want to talk a little bit about this cathedral and bazaar. Do we know this term, anybody? Okay, all right. Talk a little bit about that and see how it might relate. It was talked about a lot for code. Does it relate to APIs and the way we use APIs on the web? So I want to talk about the nature of this thing called open APIs. What's an open API? We have an idea of open source. Can we have open APIs at all? What are some of the challenges of APIs on the web? Do I trust this API? Will this API be here years from now when I build my business on it, and so on and so forth? And then finally, I'd like to start a discussion about what I'm kind of calling an open API community. You know, there was a stage in software where we understood that OS vendors were kind of owning the space, and we needed to level the playing field in some kind of way. I think some of this is going on in the API world, where proprietary individuals are owning the space and they're creating silos that it's difficult to work with. And for that reason, I think it's a great opportunity to start thinking about open API the way we thought about open source 20 years ago. So let's see if that's really true or not. I kind of want to have a discussion. I'm kind of working this as a, I talk for about 5 minutes and then we discuss and let's see if this works out. We've got enough people here that I think that'll make it valuable. So I start, my sort of kickoff point is this notion of the cathedral and the bazaar. And this, it really starts, it's kind of this meme in the space. It's this notion, this sort of story we have in the keynote today. We were talking in the security space. We were talking about the idea of lots of eyes on software and the notion of keeping things open and does that really work. This notion of cathedral and bazaar was first discussed in an essay that was released in 1997 at Linux Congress. So this idea that there are a couple of different ways to do open source, the cathedral way of doing open source and the bazaar way of doing open source. And Eric S. Raymond, who delivered the paper, was arguing that one way is better than the other. Within a year or two, he actually put together that essay and several other essays into a book and called it Cathedral and Bazaar. So this book was released in 99. What I find interesting is in 1999, he had to convince the publisher to release the book as an open source book, which was a real learning experience as well. So this book is open for anyone to use and reuse as any other open source is. So what's the heart of this? Cathedral model. Cathedral model is when the open source is delivered when the product is delivered. Nobody gets to see it during the time it's being built. We build it all ourselves. We don't ask for any other input from anyone else. We know exactly what we want to do. We control all the details. And when we finally release the product, we release the source. And at the time, 20 years ago, that was the common way of doing open source. When we release the product, we give away the code. But in the essay and in the book, Raymond actually tried to advocate for another model. And that is where the code is developed in public. And he was saying in public over the internet, so that every step along the way, we get lots of eyes, and we ask for lots of contributions, and we get lots of people involved in the process. So this is what he called the bazaar model, the model where it's an open bazaar where anybody can set up a tent, everybody can get involved, and everybody can contribute in some kind of way. It's not a pre-planned cathedral, it's an open bazaar. So the first question I have when we think about, this really relates a lot to source code. But the question I have is, when we build APIs, and there are lots of companies whose entire business model, entire delivery model is dependent on APIs, often APIs that they don't control, APIs that are offered by Google, or APIs that are offered by telephone companies, or Microsoft, or and lots of other organizations. So what is the API model in this point of view? Are APIs developed in the open for lots of people to contribute to on the web, or are they more of a cathedral model where you just get the API at the end and then you get some description information and that's it? Who here is actually working in some kind of web API space today? Right? So how does that work for you? Who builds APIs here? Like you create APIs.
No, but, you know,
you have in the past. So how does that work for you? Is it do you build these kinds of interfaces and connector bits through GitHub? Can anybody contribute, or is it mostly kind of a contained experience in your path and your experience?
I would say it's interesting that it's been part of where it is. The implementation of the API is open source and welcome to contribution, but then in order to provide a good support experience, we wanted users of software to run our official, use our official install of that.
So right.
There was sort of this weird dichotomy of look, we're an open source company, we want to be open, we want contribution, but at the same time, when you actually start using this thing for real in your own software, it's don't go and run some funky form. We can't help with that.
Right. So you had two things going, right? You had code itself that you wanted to add an API for, and then the API you would think of as a public space, but the code you would think of as more of a controlled space, or is it the other way around?
It depended on who we were talking to. It was someone who could help us build the API. We wanted them in on the back end side, but then when we published it to just consumers,
yeah,
rather than collaborators,
uh-huh,
it was much more of a one-way street.
Yeah, so you didn't want consumers to fork the API, right? Because that would mess things up. You're not actually, so in other words, the API becomes a sort of frozen thing.
Yeah, a contract is what,
right? Yeah, so we'll talk about that contract department in a minute too. Jerome, do you have something? You have some talk, right? I guess I'm not talking about this. You're involved in the Open API initiative here.
Yeah, absolutely. And we provide tools to let companies really design APIs and publish them on GitHub and test them efficiently. So we see various patterns that most of the time the API is it's pretty tightly controlled, I'd say, and for developer experience perspective, the user obviously more want to make sure that the contract is properly documented, use certain investment, make it really work. So a lot of effort to control the user experience. I see that as more and more important. Maybe over having something more open and distributed, there's more of a better approach. Maybe still the early stage, where we are still learning how to do that the API right,
mm-hmm,
and not thinking too much about the network and the effect. But if I look at Earth and Internet, we use also quite a lot of APIs in our operation of our platform. And so we can rely more and more on that. And maybe we don't think yet too much about that. We see sometimes issues when the API is going down. So I think we are becoming more and more dependent on that.
Yeah.
Internally, but I don't think we have a good way to think about these dependencies and manage them properly.
So it's a lot what Peter's saying as well, in the sense that the API itself kind of needs to be very, very fixed in order to get the experience that you would want others to have. And when you say user experience, you actually mean developer users, right? The people who are using the API. Yeah.
They want stability, they want the ability of the API,
yeah,
operation as well. So
predictability and stuff.
Predictability,
yeah.
So
yeah,
that's what we see most of the time.
Yeah. Interesting. Does anybody else have, like, your own experience? Anybody else creates APIs here? Yes. I mean, how do you feel about the notion that somebody might fork the interface, actually fork the API or use the API for something else? You know what I mean to say?
Yeah, sorry, just one question. I think that there is a tension between having a bunch of disparate APIs that are don't fit well together, that don't look similar and fade into the application in many cases, versus more like this Unix interface where you've got files and you've got something and you understand things and what happens underneath that. The bizarre thing, but at least the stuff is coherent and cohesive. So I think having resolved that tension is an interesting topic. I don't know what the answer is. I think we're too far on the bizarre end at the moment for distributed systems in particular.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that the CE model, for those of you who remember distributed computing environments,
yep,
years ago, I don't think that's what I'm all into. So sorry.
So that's a really interesting perspective too. So you sort of step back even a little bit further from a system level view or from a distributed level view. we may be too much of a bazaar, too difficult to integrate or interop and so on and so forth. Whereas, you know, the key elements that we learned from that Linux experience is that you wanted these sort of stable interface patterns, but you wanted lots of evolvability around that. You wanted some guarantees of access. If you go all the way back to the Unix principles about you always use text because that's the thing that people move back and forth. We don't have all of that quite the same way in APIs, we may have a higher level. The other thing that's interesting to talk about just from the API perspective rather than just talking about the services behind them is you may remember recently, a couple of years ago, there were legal fights over whether or not the API could be copyrighted or patented or closed out from everyone else, right? Which had the possibility of threatening business models and other things, right? And while it played out against code-based APIs, it would have had a huge implication as well for web-based APIs. So this notion of whether the API is a little bit too much of a bazaar, a little too much stabilized, whether or not it's a threat from a patent or copyright standpoint of view is, I think, something that is not quite resolved, and I think it's a big challenge for us. So I want to take a step a little bit further in and talk a little bit about Raymond's. One of the other things he included in the book, Cathedral and Bazaar, is what he called his lessons, his open source lessons. And there are lots of them. There were actually 19. We're not going to go through all of them. But there was this notion about scratching an itch and how you behave in a group and how you use the many eyes and so on and so forth. And it sort of became a kind of an ethos or a kind of a pattern about how we would talk about open source software. And I think some of these lessons actually come really close to home for APIs or web APIs on the web when we're going to do distributed computing. And the easy one is scratching an itch. Like, we want this low barrier of entry, this ability to create an interface to allow people to access other things. So I think that makes a lot of sense. But this one here in particular is pretty tough. Throw early iterations away. This idea that you should be able to start small and iterate has this situation where suddenly the interface is brittle or it becomes too much of a bazaar. It creates this tension about whether or not I can count on this. Release early and often, I think actually we do a pretty good job in the API space about this release early and often, especially if it's a centralized sort of SaaS engine rather than an API for a localized situation. I can continue to add features, continue to make bug fixes and things like this without actually affecting any of the consumers. So I can actually grow and evolve that at a pretty fast pace, which is pretty cool. I think the many heads that are better than one is kind of a toss-up. I think there are lots of advantages to getting lots of people contributing to the APIs or contributing to the stuff behind the APIs. At the same time, I do think I didn't get your first name. I think Quinton's comment about a little bit too much of a bazaar is pretty spot on. Sometimes too many heads means we have way too much in the basket. It's sort of a governance pattern. The problem is this thing is now becoming unusable because we've got so many angles. It turns out it's incredibly difficult to fork an API. And in fact, the people who build the original API and the code behind it don't want that kind of activity because it bifurcates the community and it's hard to get it back together. As Quinton's kind of mentioned, suddenly you've got too many things in there. I think smart messages dumb code is a pretty common pattern in API space. We tend to send simple serialized messages or simple activation messages like hypermedia or just even content, simple content in small bits like event-based. So I think it's pretty good, and that allows people to put a lot into the message itself, and so you have a lot of possibilities there. Here's another one that I think is difficult. The idea behind the original Unix and Linux platform is like, I'll take a little set, a little lock, a little grep, and before you know it, I've got an app that nobody has before, right? There's a lot of serendipity involved. Some of the early thoughts about the way the Unix system was going to work is there weren't going to be applications. There were simply going to be this environment where I could assemble things in any way I wanted to. And I think there are parts of the API space that aspire to that. You know, here's a thing that does currency translations. Here's a thing that does credit card transactions. Here's a thing that does shipping. Here's a thing that manages a cart, maybe with a little glue and snap together. I built myself a service. Well, it turns out I think as Quentin pointed out, it's incredibly difficult to do on the API space because everybody's a one-off. Everybody's got their own interfaces and their rules, and I have to build a special client adapter for every single one of these. I can't just simply do one thing and one thing well and pass text messages back and forth. So I think we're having some trouble in this space. But I think most of this has to do with design patterns rather than technical details. Now here's a big one. When plan to hand the project off is another big principle from ESR's set of lessons. You can't just abandon an open source project. You may have started by scratching an itch, but now you need to pass it on to someone else and keep it vital. And I think there's a real danger in the API community. I become dependent on a proprietary API, I build a business model on it, and then suddenly that API gets yanked out from under me or the business arrangement changes. I think we've seen some examples of talk earlier. Google has canceled APIs for folks. Twitter has changed APIs specifically in order to break a bunch of clients that have been built upon it. This provides a real danger to the community in the sense that I'm not going to bet a model. I'm not going to bet my business or build a model around it if it's so brittle that I have to keep managing it or changing it every time. So what I find fascinating is right around the same time that Raymond was talking about this notion of the cathedral and the bazaar and what's the better way to think about open source, there's another gentleman by the name of Clay Shirky. Actually, a year before in 1996, I think it was for ACM or IEEE, he had written an article called, In Praise of Evolvable Systems. What is an evolvable system? And Clay sort of laid out this notion that you can start small and add to it without creating a bunch of havoc. And he had this great line, which I've used several times. Centrally designed systems start out strong, and they improve logarithmically. And that's a lot of what we do in terms of central source. We have a set of controls, and we build up from there. But the point he makes is that systems that are evolvable actually start out weak. They're less than minimum viable. They're barely working. But they can improve exponentially by suddenly, especially because you have this idea of serendipitous reuse and discovery and lots of eyes and lots of vines, suddenly you can leapfrog. You can actually make lots of incremental changes that suddenly result in a big shift. We even know from physical evolution that often it's a series of small random changes that result in a big success. So Clay makes this sort of case that the central notion is very different than this evolvable notion. And that sort of takes me to the next question I have. Is in our experience as people who use APIs and people who develop them, how many of them actually follow that sort of set of 19 principles, especially the ones we talked about in terms of Raymond? And even better, how many of them actually can safely evolve without breaking folks? What's been our experience? Anybody want to talk about what works, what doesn't? Anybody built any that actually work along this kind of way? This is your chance to tell me. Talk to me, you know. Yeah, so I think it's a good point. A lot of what I'm dancing around is this idea that the rules are actually different for distributed systems, right? And it isn't just the typical whatever it is, 10 or 12 rules about all the lies about distributed systems, like it's always up and running and there's only one administrator and stuff like that. But there are just the way you think about creating a system that is going to be distributed. Distributed in the sense of it's homed in lots of places. It's actually built by lots of different people, we use lots of different platforms and all sorts of other things. So that sort of brings this notion of maybe there's another set of lessons, there's another set of principles. Maybe we need to sort of create a sort of an actionable set that that go off of, what is it, Deutsch? Is that Deutsch that had the 10 lies of distributed software or something like that? From Sun Microsystems. Maybe we need a sort of an actionable list, sort of like what Raymond talks about, but that is focused specifically on distributed systems. Make sure that the changes you make don't break anybody, and so on and so forth. There could be a whole set of things like that. Make sure you design it to be extensible as well as forward compatible, things like that. And then I think that goes to the evolvable element. I think part of the bizarre problem is if I fork it or if I start one of my own, what I've really done is actually made the problem worse instead of better. But often if I have some open source software, if I can fork that, I might actually make it better because I might be creating a different community. So the rules may be counterintuitive in some ways, I think. So the sort of the next idea is, I've talked a lot about web APIs. Is there a way to talk about open web APIs, and we'll be talking about open source. Here's the thing. These APIs are going nuts. In the API space, there's just tens and tens of thousands of them happening all the time, and there are some big business models being built on them. So we heard Dropbox today and so many other things. Their total model is based on an API. That's how they distribute things. That's how they actually get things done. They don't distribute code anymore. They simply distribute the API, and we run them at a remote distance. I read a recent Market Insider report that's predicting $200 billion opportunity over the next 5 years in this space. And this is just one of the many versions of this story. There's lots of opportunity here. There are lots of chances for people to do well. There's also lots of chances to do it really badly. I think those of us who spend time in the API space, every couple of years we hear about, usually it's a sort of industry initiative, it's like a cross business, a telco industry or a banking industry or a health industry, and somebody is going to build this one canonical API to rule them all, and they spend hundreds of millions and it tanks. So because they're not learning the basic rules about how to write distributed systems, and so there's lots of opportunity lost there. There's lots of trouble. So people invest a lot and they try to get something out of it. At the same time, just at the individual API level, there's a recent case where Google actually pulled its entire Flight API that people had been building lots of apps on because they wanted to build their own application. So they offered this API for a couple of years, I think it was maybe close to 5 years, and I'm sure they learned lots of things. And then they said, thank you very much. And they just pulled a pin, and lo and behold, suddenly they have a new application that helps you track and manage flights. So that's a drag. Twitter has this reputation of actually not paying attention to their developer community very often. They have a huge API. Of course, the Register loves headlines, right? So I had picked them just to kind of get us talking. But they've actually changed their entire client API just to flush out competitor clients. They basically killed the client market by changing the API. Then they bought one of the better clients, and then the rest of them are just barely hanging on by a thread. So somewhere along the line, we're becoming, those of us who use APIs or those of us trying to build systems on APIs, even if you're building inside your company, we're becoming captive of people that have other kinds of motivations or other kinds of needs. And this seems very familiar to me, but now it's in a very different space. So it sort of takes me back to the Cathedral and the Bazaar model. Right, so what is the model where the source code's only accessible via the API and we never get to see it? What is that? That doesn't seem to be the Cathedral or the Bazaar, right? Suddenly, all I get to see is the windows and the doors. And I'm given a key to walk in and out, but I might have that key taken away from me at any time. So I don't know how to deal with that. I don't know how to... Like, if I was an investor, this is a dangerous spot for me, I think. So as a consumer of APIs, how do I know this is a healthy API? You know, one of the things I do in source code is I check to see how often the repo's up, updated, what the activity is on the site, so on and so forth. Can I do that for APIs? Is that for some of them I can, right? Because some of the API interfaces are released, but often they're not. How can I tell this is safe? What's being done with my data? What's being done with the information I pass back and forth? There are a handful of times when we realize it turns out in using an interface that collects, like on a phone, it collects a lot of other data that I didn't know it collected, right? So maybe I'm building an application that is putting my users at a disadvantage. Is this an ethical API? I have this cool API that I can use that actually, if I send it a picture, it identifies the food on your plate and estimates the calories. Is that a Mechanical Turk or somewhere in Asia where somebody is actually reading a picture and typing it in and getting paid a penny? How do I know what's actually going on behind the scenes? I can go well beyond simple ethics, right? I can talk about how do I know about the ethics of the community, of the organization behind this API, their diversity, their inclusion, where they source their goods and materials, all these other things. How can I find that out? What is the governance model for this API? Is it one person who just decides how it's going to work, or is there a committee? Is there a committee that I can get involved in? All these other things that we have established for open source software. Will I get banned in the end? Will I have the rug pulled out from underneath? Or is there a commitment in this open API ethos that we will find some home for this interface, we'll find some home for this work? And I think when we start to look at this list of things, these are things we all want, but I don't think there's any central way to get this. I think these may be examples of things that are important to us, but there's no real leverage. We may need an open API community the way we're building an open source community. And the Linux Foundation may be actually a great place for this. I think we need that kind of community. There are lots of standards. I think one of the things Clint was talking about is it's a bit of a bizarre that everything's a little bit different. We might be able to improve that with standards, even the notion of best practices or plugins or adapters, the way we think of drivers and so on and so forth, the way we solve a lot of this problem at the code level. Mapping the landscape. There are hundreds and hundreds of API providers. Why do we not treat them as a community? Why do we not, put them to the same standards? Why do we not get them to cooperate with each other and help each other? How do we support all the developers, all the startups, all the individual developers who want to create APIs or actually consume them and look out for them? How do we actually connect stakeholders, whether they're Microsoft or Google or Kubernetes or Twilio or some small company that's starting something? Everyone has a stake in this. How do we create those principles about safety and ethics and values and visibility? Can we incubate initiatives? Can we be a place if somebody's creating a new standard or creating a new set of principles or creating new libraries to create APIs? Can the foundation do that here? Can we identify and reward good citizens? Can we have a sort of a seal of approval kind of experience that is part of the Linux Foundation, just being part of the foundation? Sort of like what's happened with the cloud native, right? We sort of gathered all these disparate things together in order to create a community that helped drive that up. Now, it turns out many of these pieces exist, but I think they exist in very disparate ways, and they don't exist in coordinated ways. One of the things that I like is that there is a thing called Open API Initiative here at the Linux Foundation. It's focused now on one particular format of description, but there are so many more things that I think that Open API Initiative could do in helping the landscape and the community and all these other things. It may not be quite the mission of that group, but I think there's an example there. What's that?
I have a question.
Yes?
So there is one thing to standardize the way you structure your APIs. This can be critical, but how can you deal with the API business logic? I mean, the fact that Google pulled out the Elasticsearch was not because the structure of the API is gone. Business logic is gone.
Right. Business logic is not gone, it's actually been repurposed, very close, right?
Yeah, so,
yeah.
And this is why people are doing web APIs, not to disclose the business logic. So how can you build up the community? I mean, you will have a community, and all of the APIs will be according to the structure that you define, but the business logic will be hidden anyway.
Well, yeah, so I think it's an excellent question. So the question is, if I create an API, is that guaranteed that there's only one source of code? So if Google pulls away their code, can someone else provide that code? In other words, can the API exist with having more, like, as a driver rather than as a source?
Yeah, I mean, if the API doesn't mandate to where the social bundled with it, and you cannot pull it away. I just see a way that you have a community on it.
Understood. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I think that it's the danger of conflating is the code and the specification with the actual web service, right?
Yeah.
So I think that I think that distinction needs to be made in the test, so that you can have open API development for the code, for the interaction with the service, but then you will separately have different organizations that are saying, I am willing to run, you know, these flight tracking APIs or whatever. But you don't make that distinction, then it's hard to
right, so I think that's sort of the same kind of message that you're talking about, right? Is thinking of the API separately from the source means that you have another set of challenges, which might be some, like you were saying, somebody would volunteer to say, I'll provide the source for this API. And I might do that if I knew that the API was stable, right? Rather than the API is actually just tied to one particular set of source.
Because providing the service of the source or whatever is an operational
right. Right. That's kind of the same thing you're talking about, right? Yeah. So I think that's exactly right, and I think it's important to think of the APIs as a different ecosystem that is separate from the code. And I think if I knew that there was a community that was looking out for the APIs or helping create an API world, I might be more interested in that operational investment to back that API. And that actually might be a marketplace for the source for the stable API. In other words, there's a bunch of us that provide that kind of backing.
But your question of ethics actually goes more to the source than necessarily to the API itself.
Okay, can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, the question of whether or not the food calories and everything is actually tied to somebody in a developing economy that's being paid a penny to resolve it is that's not a question of what is the code of the
Yeah, that's not a question of the interface, it's a question of the implementation. Right. And if I knew that APIs had to disclose, had some labeling thing that would disclose what the implementation is like, even though I didn't see that code, that might help me choose another implementation. Or if I could actually choose an API and then choose an implementation. I want the food API and I'm going to use any implementation because I something like that. We also have some people that are starting to map the space. This is one of my colleagues at API Academy, Manny Majoui, who last year started to map the API landscape. This looks very similar to the kind of landscape mapping that we see happening here at the foundation. Some of these are, this is again a sort of a conflation challenge. Some of these are people who provide the source behind an API. Some of these are people who provide the API framework or the API hosting, but there's some work that needs to be done there, but some people are starting on this effort. There's lots of online community. API Craft is one of the biggest online communities. There are lots of local meetups, like a local level, around the world. Almost every country I go to, every continent I go to, I can find a meetup. And in fact, the Linux Foundation hosts the API Strategy and Practice Conference, one of the more successful conferences, has just joined part of the Linux Foundation. And this is a great opportunity to start kind of looking at the landscape, collecting stakeholders, and doing all these other things. I think we just did one this past year. But I think there's still more. Like, where are those stakeholder, where is that set of principles? Where are those incubating? Maybe we also need to talk about the notion of that conflation, we have to fight that. And then how do we reward good citizens? How do we make sense of it? In other words, how do we sort of get Zemlin's flywheel working in this API space where more and more of us are building businesses based on the notion of collecting things together? We can become victims of what happens behind the scenes. How do we protect ourselves? How do we enable more communities? How do we enable more people to do things on their own without having to rely on large private corporations? And I think that's kind of what I'd like to see. And I'm being told my time is up. I'm going to kind of end with this last question. We won't get a chance to talk a lot about this here. I'll be here for the rest of the day, and I would love to speak online. You can find me. Do we need this kind of open API community? Is this something that the Linux Foundation can help us with or some other organization? And if so, what are the things it needs to do? I think some of the stuff that was mentioned here about making sure we understand the difference between what's an interface and what's source and how does it matter? Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the source is all that matters, but maybe there's something else. So what is the future of like creating an open API space? I need to stop because we need to keep going to the next session. I want to thank you very, very much. I'll post the slides online later today. And if I can, I'll try to do a transcript of the conversation we've had. Thank you very, very much, and I hope I get to see you again. Thanks.